Welcome to the weekly sermon podcast of Valley Grove Baptist Church. We are thankful you stopped by to hear from God's Word, to grow closer to Him, and to be inspired to reach your area of influence. One of my most favorite parts of the Christmas story, we're going to talk about the wise men this morning, and from Matthew 2, and then from an Old Testament passage that you might not have been aware of is a connection to this. So I love the wise men story. In fact, I love it so much that when I was in college in a class, the title of the class was Jesus the Messiah. And so we looked at the entire life of Jesus from the gospel in a variety of different ways. And we had to do a research paper. And so my research paper was on the wise men. Out of Matthew chapter 2 in the birth narrative of Jesus. So I had a great time with that. I got an A on the paper, just in case you're wondering. I got an A on it. And so I love the wise men. So what we're going to do this morning is we're going to read the wise men story, which is Matthew 2, 1 through 12. And as we read it, well, let's just read it, and then we'll kind of come back and work our way through it. We'll make a few application points, and then we'll flip to the Old Testament and where we can kind of look at that there. All right. Now, after Jesus was born in Bethlehem of Judea in the days of Herod the king, behold, wise men from the east came to Jerusalem, verse 2, saying, "Where is he who has been born king of the Jews? For we saw his star when it rose and have come to worship him." When Herod the king heard this, he was troubled, and all Jerusalem with him. And assembling the chief priests and scribes of the people, he inquired of them where the Christ was to be born. They told him, "In Bethlehem of Judea, for so it is written by the prophet. And you, O Bethlehem, in the land of Judea, are by no means least among the rulers of Judah. For from you, shall come a ruler who will shepherd my people Israel." All right, verse 7. Here we go. Then Herod summoned the wise men secretly and ascertained from them what time the star had appeared. And he sent them to Bethlehem, saying, "Go and search diligently for the child. And when you have found him, bring me word that I too may come and worship him." After listening to the king, they went on their way, and behold, the star that they had seen when it rose went before them until it came to rest over the place where the child was. When they saw the star, they rejoiced exceedingly with great joy. And going into the house, they saw the child with Mary his mother, and they fell down and worshipped him. Then opening their treasure, they offered him gifts of gold and frankincense and myrrh. Last one, verse 12. And being warned in a dream not to return to Herod, they departed for their own country by another way. All right, let's go back to the beginning. Let's go back to verse number 1. Well, I want to kind of point out just a few things, make sure we're on the same page with this story, and then we'll draw out a couple of application points there at the end. All right, so notice the language in verse number 1. Now, after Jesus was born, okay, what does that tell us? Thank you, Malachi. He was already born. That means that, unfortunately, if you set a nativity scene out, the likelihood that the wise men and the shepherds were there at the same time, very low likelihood. They probably are not there at the same time. The shepherds are there right as Jesus is born, and this says after Jesus was born. Now, how long is the after? We don't know. But the likelihood that they're at the same time, very, very low. This was probably well after Jesus was born, well after the shepherds had come and left, right? Now, notice what else it says. It says where this wise men came from. They came, this is going to be important later, okay? They came from the east, okay? That means anything east of where? Jerusalem. Because the wise men land in Jerusalem. Now, why do they go to Jerusalem? Because that is the capital of the area of Judea that the Romans have set up, okay? That's the capital of Israel, kind of that. Because at this time, Herod, now the Herod in the story, another key point, is Herod the Great. This is not the same Herod that is around when Jesus, later in the Gospels, when Jesus is doing ministry and miracles, okay? Those Herods are his sons. This is Herod the Great, all right? Herod the Great. So Herod the Great is king under like a consolidated Judea and Jerusalem, which is Judea and Galilee and all that. So it's all one region at this time, if memory serves me correct. And it's ruled by Herod the Great, who is king. So that's why the wise men go to Jerusalem. All right. So when they get to Jerusalem, verse 2, what do they do? Or verse 2. What do they do? What do they immediately do when they get to Jerusalem? And they're in the court of the king. They say, "Where is he who has been born king of the Jews?" Now, later in this little section, verses 2 through 6, Herod, it says that Herod is greatly troubled. That word greatly troubled means he is under great mental distress. Now, why is Herod under great mental distress? Not just thinks. He is the king. Right? That'd be like somebody working at your place of employment go, and whatever your job title is, you know, lead manufacturer, whatever. Hey, where's the lead manufacturer of this job? I heard there's a new one coming in. You'd go, what's happening to me? Right? That's exactly the way Herod felt. He's king of the Jews. Rome has put him in charge of this area. He's the king of the Jews. And these guys from the east who are not under his jurisdiction are coming in saying, "Hey, where's the king of the Jews who's just been born?" So Herod is like, "Wait a minute, what is going on?" And so he calls together all the smartest people in the court and the scribes and the religious leaders, and he says, "Hey, what's the deal about this?" And they search the scriptures and they find a verse in the prophets, right, that says exactly where the Messiah, the king of the Jews, is going to be born, in Bethlehem. And so then Herod asks for two favors, okay? He asks for two favors. The first favor is, "Hey, y'all mentioned a star. When did y'all first see this star? When did it first appear?" Okay, that's question number one. Or that's favor number one. Favor number two is, "Hey, when y'all find out exactly where he is in Bethlehem, why don't y'all just come back and tell me? Because I too want to go worship this new king who's going to take my place." Right? Now, you can read the undertones, and if you've read the rest of the story, you know none of that is really true. That is all so he can go kill all the babies. Right? That's what happens next. Right? But at this point, the wise men don't know this. And so they're probably like, "Well, here's when the star appeared, and sure, we'll go find him and, you know, we'll tell you where he's at." So the wise men leave. They leave Jerusalem and they make the journey to Bethlehem, not that far away. And so when they get there, what does the text tell us that they do in verses 9 through 11? Well, while they're on the way, the same star that they saw when they were still in the east appeared again, and in some way, shape, or form goes ahead of them and rests on the house where Jesus is. Now, we don't know exactly what that looks like. Is it like a star comes out of the sky and literally like hovers over the top of the house, or somehow they're able to coordinate a star in the sky over the... It just says the star appeared again and rests over the house where Jesus is. And so they're joyful because now they know exactly where to go. So when they get to the house, what does the text tell us they do? They go in and it tells us that they immediately worship Jesus. In verse 11 it says, "And going into the house, they saw the child with Mary his mother, and they fell down and worshiped him." In other words, they laid prostrate on the ground, a sign of great homage and great respect and giving authority to this baby. Right. And then beyond that, what do? They give three gifts: gold, frankincense, and myrrh. Now, we're familiar with gold. Gold is the same gold that you might be wearing today or that you're familiar with. Frankincense and myrrh, not so much. So let's explain those. Frankincense and myrrh were made out of the resin of specific trees, two different trees, that grew basically from Africa to India through the Arabian Peninsula, and they would take the resin, kind of like gumballs on pine trees, you know, the little balls that are hard and resinous. That's what it is. And they would take it up and they would break it up. It is extremely expensive. They would make it into perfume, into ointment, into salve. And it was either for the ultra wealthy or for very, very special occasions like a wedding. Or in some cases, like we see at the end of the gospel story, when someone dies. And they would rub that over them so the stench of death and decay would not permeate the area, right? And so very expensive, very ornate, usually reserved for only the ultra wealthy. And these three wise men willingly give these gifts to Mary and Joseph and baby Jesus. Now, how much are they? Like, how big of a gift is it? We don't know. But we do know it is significant. Because just kind of play the story out. What happens right after this story? Mary and Joseph and baby Jesus are led. An angel comes and tells Joseph, y'all need to get out of here. And they go to Egypt. And they live in Egypt for how many years? Anybody know? 3. How do you think they supported themselves while they were in Egypt for 3 years? Gold, frankincense, and myrrh. Right? They likely sold it. Got the money, and that's how they lived, very likely for 3 years, because they're not in their home. They don't know anybody. They're not with family. They can't say, let me call my aunt to come over and grandma to help feed the baby, right? They're in a foreign, and they stay there for roughly 3 years, right? And then they go back to where Joseph is originally from in Nazareth, right? So that kind of ends the story. Verse 12 is the final verse, and as we read, the wise men are warned in a dream not to go back to see Herod, but to go home by another way, and that's exactly what they do. All right, so real quick, I want to draw two application points that I think are very clear from the wise men. The wise men's goal when they leave the east is to go and worship the king that is coming. That's clear, right? That's their stated purpose. When they land in Jerusalem, it's, hey, where's the newborn king of the Jews? We came to worship him. That's their goal. And that's what they accomplished. They accomplished their goal. But they do it by doing two things. They are willing to go, and they are willing to give. So the application, or the main point of the story is, we could ask it in a question, what are we willing to do to worship Jesus? And the answer to that question is, you got to be willing to go, and you got to be willing to give. In other words, it is improper for us to say, I love Jesus with all my heart, soul, mind, and strength, but don't ask me to go anywhere and don't ask me to give. That you can't say both of those things. You are telling a falsehood if you are not willing to go and you're not willing to give, but you want to worship Jesus and you want to say you love him with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength. Now, I'm going to stop here for just a moment and give you a preview. I don't know exactly when this preview is going to come into fruition in the future, but next year we will be talking about giving, okay? And you know what really just, and I have not heard any of you say this, okay? All right, so let me just preface this. I'm not at anybody in this room or who may not be here today, but usually is in this room, okay? So let me just preface that. But it really just, gets all under my skin when people out there go, all that preacher talks about money all the time. Why they always got to talk about me giving money? It really gets all over me. You want to know why? Who you think pays the light bill? The power... Jim is on the board of EMC. I don't know if y'all know that or not. Guess what? They don't give us electricity for free. We got to pay for it. The propane, Evergreen, isn't that who we use for propane? They don't just go, oh, shucks, y'all a church. Here, have all the propane you want. No, they send us a very large bill every time that tank gets filled up. Right? Just that alone. So it gets all over me because those same people who, oh, why is he talking about money all the time? They want kids taken care of in the nursery. They want a heated and lighted building when they come in. They don't want it too cold in they don't want it too hot in the summer or too cold in the winter. They want it just the right temperature, and they expect all this stuff just to happen. Right? It don't happen. It takes money. Do you want to know what it takes to reach people all around the world with the gospel of Jesus Christ? It takes people being willing to go, and it takes people giving money to support those people who are willing to go. Like our friend who is pastor at Meansville Baptist Church, John and Cheryl Blackman, their entire family, they live in Bangkok, Thailand now. We believe as Southern Baptists, based on the gospel of Jesus Christ, that we are to go to the ends of the world. Right? That's what Jesus said as He's ascending to heaven. Go to the ends of the world. That's a paraphrased version of it. Well, guess what? To get over there, what do they walk? No, there's an ocean in the way. Well, how'd they get over there? They had to fly. That costs what? Money. And when they get over there, what are they supposed to do? We want them to share the gospel. That costs money. Right? So the reality is, if we're going to be willing to reach people in our area of influence, we don't live in Bangkok, we live here in Thomaston, in our area of influence, what is it going to take? People willing to go and people willing to give. That's the hard reality. Now, if we lived in a different culture, in a different time, in a different place, and if God would have created a world different than the one we live in, it might be you might be willing to have this and that. But this is the world we live in. And in order to reach our area of influence, it is going to take you and I being willing to go and being willing to do things we may or may not have ever done. And it's going to cost going and giving. And so we're going to talk about that more in the future. So when we get there, don't go, right? Because if you do that, you know what you just told me? I'm stingy. I don't care about the kingdom. Just reality. You want to worship? You got to be willing to go, and you got to be willing to give, right? Now, we could cut it right there. It'd be a great Sunday, woo, all that. But there's more to this story. Now, I want you to turn to Daniel chapter 2. Daniel chapter 2. I read something this week as I was reading Daniel chapter 2 that I don't know if I've ever truly put together in the way that the Lord brought it together in my mind and as I was reading the scripture this week. Now, we're going to have to read 19 verses to get there. So hang with me. We're going to read all 19 verses. All right, here we go. In the second year of the reign of Nebuchadnezzar, Nebuchadnezzar had dreams, plural. His spirit was troubled and his sleep left him. So he had these dreams and he couldn't sleep. All right. The second year of the reign of Nebuchadnezzar, just for context, that's around 603 to 602 BC. All right. 600 years before Jesus is born. All right. Then the king commanded that the magicians, enchanters, sorcerers, and the Chaldeans be summoned to tell the king his dreams. So they came in and stood before the king. Verse 3. And the king said to them, I had a dream, and my spirit is troubled to know the dream. Pretty simple. Then the Chaldeans said to the king in Aramaic, O king, live forever. Tell your servants the dream, and we will show you the interpretation. That's a natural course of events in these proceedings. You tell somebody the dream, and these people tell you what it means. Then the king answered and said to the Chaldeans, Then the word from me is firm. If you do not make known to me the dream and its interpretation, you shall be torn limb from limb, and your houses shall be laid in ruins. All right, you get what the king is asking them to do? He's not just saying, tell me the interpretation of my dream. No, he is saying, read my mind, tell me what the dream was, and then tell me the interpretation. But if you show the dream and its interpretation, you shall receive from me gifts and rewards and great honor. Therefore, show me the dream and its interpretation. Verse 7. They answered a second time and said, Let the king tell his servants the dream, and we will show you its interpretation. Again, just tell us what you saw and we'll tell you. The king answered and said, I know with certainty that you are trying to gain time, because you see that the word from me is firm. All right, verse 9. If you do not make the dream known to me, There is but one sentence for you. You have agreed to speak lying and corrupt words before me till the times change. In other words, you just playing along with me. You tell me what I want to hear then, and then when times change, you tell me what I want to hear at that time. Therefore, tell me the dream, and I shall know that you can show me its interpretation. Verse 10, listen to the words that the Chaldeans say. The Chaldeans answered the king and said, there is not a man on earth who can meet the king's demand. True statement. For no great and powerful king has asked a thing of any magician, enchanter, or Chaldean. In other words, you're asking something that nobody has ever done, and there's not a man on earth who can do this. The thing that the king asks is difficult, and no one can show it to the king except the gods, plural, little g, whose dwelling is not with flesh. All right, so they are up the creek without a paddle or a boat, right? Because of this, the king was angry and very furious and commanded that, listen to the word, all the, what's the next words? Wise men. Okay, so who is the king talking to? Wise men. That's a conglomerate term for enchanters, magicians, and Chaldeans. They are all under the general term of wise men. That's what they did. Wise men in this day were learned people. That's who Daniel is. He's in that group of, as we'll see in a minute, of wise men. They learned all of the knowledge of the world, and they put it together, and they would teach people about this learning. They were astronomers and scientists and all of that, okay? So the king is very mad at all the wise men, and he commands that all the wise men of Babylon be destroyed. Verse 13. So the decree went out, and the wise men were about to be killed. Notice the language. About to be killed. And they sought Daniel and his companions to kill them. Why? Because Daniel, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego were wise men. Okay? Verse 14. Then Daniel replied with prudence and discretion to Arioch, the captain of the king's guard, who had gone out to kill the wise men of Babylon. Verse 15. He declared to Arioch, the king's captain, why is this decree of the king so urgent? Very good question. Then Arioch made the matter known to Daniel. So he filled him in on the details. And Daniel went in and requested the king to appoint him a time that he might show the interpretation to the king. All right, so let's stop right there. So you get what's going on. The king says to all his wise men, Daniel and his friends are not in the room when he asked the wise men this. He says, hey, tell me what I dreamt, and then tell me what it means. And they're like, no man can do this. You're asking something that's too difficult. No one on earth can do this. And he's like, well, I'll show you. Y'all are all going to die, every one of you. So he sends out the decree and the command. The word gets to Daniel, and Daniel's like, hey, hold up a minute. So he goes to the king or the king's people in the court and says, hey, let me have an appointed time. Let me try to crack the code on this, and let me give the interpretation to the king. So he goes and asks for a time, for a piece of time with the king. Now, it doesn't happen immediately, as we'll see in just a second. Verse 17. Then Daniel went to his house and made the matter known to Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. That's Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. His companions. And look what they do. And told them to seek mercy from God, from the God of heaven, concerning this matter, so that Daniel and his companions might not be destroyed with the rest of the wise men of Babylon. Okay, we good? They went home and prayed about it. Prayer meeting. Verse 19. Here's the last verse we're going to read. Then the mystery was revealed to Daniel in a vision of the night. Then Daniel blessed the God of heaven. The rest of the story plays out that Daniel goes to the king, Nebuchadnezzar. He tells him what he dreamt, and then he tells him the interpretation that all the wise men are saved, and Daniel is promoted to this place of honor within the realm of Babylon. Now, I know what you're thinking. Okay, Pastor, why do we talk about the wise men in Matthew 2, and why do we talk about the wise men in Daniel 2? Okay? Because in my mind, the two are connected. Not just because they're called wise men, but there's more to the matter. Okay? There's more to the matter. See, Daniel and his friends, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, because of their courage to ask for an audience for the king, because of their boldness to pray, and then their Daniel's boldness to go speak what the Lord revealed to him saved an entire generation of wise men, that I would posit paved the way for the wise men of Matthew 2 to even know that there is a king of the Jews that needed to be worshipped. You're like, wait a minute, preacher. How do you know? How can you say that? All right, so number one is maps. Maps. If you Google maps of Babylonian Empire at 600 BC, you will see that all of those maps, I've got three on my tablet if you want to confirm. Three different ones, three different places. All of them will show you that the Babylonian Empire covers all of Iraq into Turkey, some in Iran, all the way over through Saudi Arabia, through Syria, through Lebanon and all of that into Israel. And one of them even extends all the way to Egypt. And if we know geography, Babylon is in which direction from Jerusalem? East. East, very good. And if you read the Old Testament, what you'll see is there are three waves of Jewish exiles that leave Jerusalem and travel east to the Babylonian Empire. The first one, which is Daniel's group, in about 605 BC. The last one is in 586 BC when the temple's destroyed. And all of those Jews, Daniel's group included, Daniel's group especially, was the wisest of the wise, the best of the best, the noblest of the nobles in Jerusalem, in Israel. And guess what they took with them? Not hard. It's in the front of your Bible. The Old Testament. Right? The Old Testament. They took the scriptures with them. Right? Ezekiel tells them that God speaking through Ezekiel says to build houses and to settle and to do good for the city and to give your sons and daughters in marriage because you're going to be there a while. And so Jewish communities of exiles spring up all over Babylon. They don't forget their Jewishness in Israel. They take the scriptures with them. And we know from history that when Cyrus the Great, a Persian who comes after this story, says, y'all can go back home, that not all the Israelites go back home. And what do those Israelites do? They keep the Old Testament in Babylon, such that in periods after Jesus is born, there's this whole teaching of Israel of wisdom that comes out that's known at the title Babylonian Talmud, which is this corpus of Jewish teaching that is in Babylon. Why? Because there's Jewish people in Babylon, right? And so I bring all this together to say that Daniel, no, I can't say that Daniel's wise men group are the direct ancestors of the wise men that show up at Jesus. But here's what I would be willing to posit to you today with almost definitiveness. That if Daniel and his men aren't bold to ask for an audience with the king, are not willing to pray about it, and then are not willing to tell the king what God has showed them, that an entire generation, literally an entire field of work is eradicated overnight from Babylon, such that later generations never get the knowledge that they have to pass on to future generations, that pass on to future generations, all the way down the line till you get to the wise men who come to worship the king. I think we can at least say that. That if Daniel's not bold and doesn't pray and God doesn't show up and God doesn't work, that this entire group of people overnight, whoop, gone. Such that future generations of those people don't know what they know. And one of the things that the wise men know in Matthew 2 is that there is a king coming one day in Israel. Right? So when we read the story of the wise men in chapter 2, if you've ever wondered, I wonder how they even knew. They knew Because people like Daniel, 600 years beforehand, made sure that their group of people knew that a king was coming in Israel and were bold and prayed and sought the Lord to do work so that the future generations would know that a king is coming in Israel who must be worshipped. So, look at me. Here's the point. Honest question. What are we doing today that will open the door for future generations, many of whom we will never know, to worship Jesus? What am I doing today that my greats with a lot of greats after it, grandkids, will be able to worship Jesus? Well, I can give you two things. You got to be willing to go, and you got to be willing to give. Right? We are here today because there are people across the road who never knew we would be here. Certainly not me, right? My people ain't from here. They're from South Georgia and from Savannah. Mom's side of the family's from Savannah. My dad's family's from South Georgia. They sure didn't know I'd be here. But because they were willing to go and because they were willing to give, you and I are here today. And what is it going to be for, you know, people who are our relatives many, 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 many years, will they be able to come here? Will they know that Jesus is worthy of worship? Will they be able to worship Him here? I sure hope so. But it's going to take us being willing to go and us being willing to give for that to happen. And so that's our challenge. What are we doing today that will open the door for future generations to worship Jesus? It's at least going to take us being willing to go and being willing to give. And I hope that's what you're willing to do starting right now. Thanks for listening. For more information about Valley Grove, visit our Facebook page or website, valleygrovechurch.org.